Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. sanctioned three more officials of the outgoing government of Liberian President George Weah.
This latest development late Monday night suggests that it's going to be a serious headache for the departing George Weah government.
A high court in Pretoria, South Africa, declares as invalid President Cyril Ramaphosa's recognition of the Zulu King. Somalia's president meets today in New York with international partners. Ukraine urges U.S. lawmakers not to betray its soldiers. Malawi's president announces renewed commitment to human rights.
Ours is a commitment to adopt legislation and policies that provide enhanced protection for marginalized groups, including women, children, older persons, and persons with disabilities.
A Guinean journalist complained about alleged government restrictions. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. government on Monday sanctioned three more officials of the outgoing government of Liberian President George Weah for alleged corruption. The officials are Finance Minister Samuel Twer, the Senators Albert Chia and Emmanuel Nukwe. According to the Liberian Front Page Africa newspaper, the sanctions come as a response to allegations that the three allegedly abused their public positions by soliciting, accepting, and offering bribes to manipulate legislative processes and public funding. The U.S. also sanctioned Monrovia City Mayor Jefferson Koji over the weekend for alleged human rights abuses and corruption. Rodney Sear is the publisher and editor-in-chief of Front Page Africa News Magazine. He tells me the new sanctions are an additional headache for the outgoing Weah government.
Well, Jim, this is a rather shocking development. Although some kind of sanctions were expected since the sanction last week Friday of Jefferson Koji, the Monrovia City mayor, people expected more names to be called, but just the timing was uncertain because annually the U.S. Treasury Department released the corruption sanctions on International Anti-Corruption Day, which fell this year on Saturday. So people thought that the first sanctions, Koji, which took place on Friday, was the main sanctions. But this latest development late Monday night suggests that it's going to be a serious headache for the departing George Weah government. The sanctions itself speak volume about the practice of the Weah administration, speaking of bribery to the legislature.
So, Rodney, and this is coming as the legislature is preparing to elect a speaker, but how common is this practice when it says here that these officials accepted and offered bribes to manipulate legislature?
Interestingly, James, as you mentioned, the legislative elections coming up soon. One of those who was sanctioned last night, Emmanuel Nukwe, is believed to have been one of the key candidates for the Senate pro tem position. So apparently the U.S. government is trying to send a message to the legislatures, especially those incoming new ones. But that's something that I think you have to look at it carefully, because the timing of it all in terms of the ongoing campaign for Senate pro tem and the speaker position in the legislature, the timing of it all is just mind-boggling that the U.S. decided to put this list out on the eve of these campaigning for the legislative leadership positions.
You mentioned the mayor of Monrovia, Jefferson Koji, who was also sanctioned last week. I understand he spoke to the media. What did he have to say?
He believes that the charges against him were unfair. He thinks that it's a witch hunt. His supporters carried him aloft on the top of their heads, celebrating him and proclaiming him as one of the strongest young advocates in the ruling CDC government. And I think he feels like that he doesn't understand why the charges were brought against him. He thinks that there's a witch hunt. As you know, there were lots of allegations against Mr. Koji during the last 5-6 years, whenever there was some kind of violence or some kind of disturbance or rioting. He was always at the center of allegations that he was involved in some kind of way. So these reports over the last 4-6 years, I think, were the reasons why the U.S. decided to sanction Mr. Koji.
Rodney, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, James.
Rodney C. is the editor-in-chief and publisher of Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper. He was speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera has announced five commitments that his administration will pursue to uphold the respect of human rights. President Chakwera made the announcement Monday during the official commemoration of International Human Rights Day in Blantyre. His announcement comes 2 days after human rights defenders complained during a press conference about state interference and intimidation.
President Lazarus Chakwera said the commemorations of this year's International Human Rights Day coincides with the 75th anniversary of the adoption of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights by the United Nations. President Chakwera said the special occasion has prompted him to announce five commitments he recently made to the international community on behalf of Malawians.
First, ours is a commitment to actively engage in the United Nations human rights mechanisms, including the Human Rights Council and treaty bodies. Secondly, ours is a commitment to adopt legislation and policies that provide enhanced protection for marginalized groups, including women, children, older persons, and persons with disabilities.
His announcement came 2 days after human rights defenders said they were concerned with state interference and intimidation against them. The rights campaigners cited several incidents, including the arrest last week of activist Boni Kalindo following anti-government protests he led in southern and northern Malawi 2 weeks ago. In her speech, United Nations Resident Coordinator for Malawi, Rebecca Adadonto, congratulated Malawi's re-election to the UN's Human Rights Council. She, however, said its selection should include a commitment to observe and respect the human rights of all Malawians.
Within Malawi, economic disparities persist, predominantly impacting rural populations and contributing to mental health challenges. Over half of Malawians grapple with poverty, and that means there is no freedom from want.
The rights campaigners asked the government to swiftly address violations which many Malawians are currently facing, especially economic rights caused by the recent 44% devaluation of Malawi local currency. But Chakwera said the solution to harsh economic problems caused by the devaluation and the shortage of foreign exchange should not be left to the government alone.
When we discuss harsh economic realities like shortage of forex and the devaluation, every privileged Malawian must be accountable to invest in anything productive that generates forex for the country, strengthens our currency, and creates opportunities for other Malawians to have jobs and enjoy their economic rights.
A representative of the civil rights campaigners in Malawi, Maggie Katewera Banda, called for the review of the laws that prevent women from participating in government.
And in this regard, we are talking about parliament, we are talking about the local government. We still see that representation of women is still on the lower side. And this we also attribute to the fact that we don't have a specific law that will promote women into elected positions.
However, President Chakwera said his administration is working to review legislation which infringe on human rights. For VOA Africa, I am Lamik Masina in Blantyre, Malawi.
A high court in Pretoria, South Africa, on Monday declared as invalid President Cyril Ramaphosa's recognition of the Zulu king, Mesu Zulu Kezwelitini. According to the Mail and Guardian newspaper of South Africa, a group of royals, including the king's uncle and half-brother, had challenged his installation on grounds that President Ramaphosa did not follow the terms of the Traditional Leadership Act. A spokesperson was quoted as saying the president is studying the ruling. Professor Sipo Sipe is a political analyst and former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He tells me the court's decision is a major embarrassment for President Ramaphosa.
The decision by the court to redirect the president of the country to consider whether he has followed the Act of Parliament in terms of the recognition of a king of the Zulu nation is a major embarrassment for the president. It's also a major embarrassment because we've had a huge ceremony that was attended by the kings of the world, including a number of royal families from Africa as well as Europe. What the judge said is that there is a way in which the president recognizes somebody who is going to be a king of the Zulus. And I think that applies to all other kings, that the appointment of a king, which is different from the appointment of presidents through elections, is that there is a customary approach which requires that there must be a serious consultation so that when a person is appointed, there's a unity within the royal family. What we know is that the royal family is the one that had gone to court to suggest that the president had not followed to the letter and the spirit of the law. Hence, the court decided that on the basis of the facts before it, it is very clear that the president had acted hastily and has not followed the rules and procedures as dictated by law.
Professor, does this ruling mean that the king is no longer king?
Well, at the moment, what it means is that the question of him being king is now being questioned. And of course, within the royal family, as I said, there are always divisions. So until this matter is settled, it will be very difficult for him to carry his functions as a king when his kingship or the recognition has been found to be invalid. So at the moment, he may have to wait for his time. But those who are challenging him are also wanting to claim that they are also heirs to the throne. So we don't know how it's going to express itself. But what we know is that there are some who accept him as king and there are some who do not accept him as king. And this is where the crisis is.
We know the Zulu nation is a powerful nation in South Africa. To what degree would this have an impact on South African election coming up soon?
Effectively, it divides the members of the royal family. It divides the Zulu nation. And if the president is also found to have acted in a manner that is not consistent, it gives a lot of support to those people who do not want to support the African National Congress, of which the president leads.
Professor, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, and thank you so much, as usual.
You're welcome.
Professor Sipho Sipiel is a political analyst and former Deputy Vice Chancellor for Institutional Support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg, South Africa. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 12. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed has arrived in New York City for a meeting later today, Tuesday, about strengthening his country's security forces. Somali government officials say they will be requesting support from the international partners on equipping the country's security forces now that arms embargo has been lifted. National Security Advisor Hussein Sheikh Ali spoke to Harun Maruf of VOA Somali Service.
New York meeting 12 December tomorrow, it's going to be a Somalia security development plan. Somalia is going to be presenting to our international partners of how Somalia is preparing itself to take responsibility from ATMIS December 2024. As you know, Harun, Somalia had agreed a national security architecture March this year in Baidabo, and that architecture implementation requires a lot of investment, which Somalia could not do it by itself. That's where we came to New York to ask help our international partners.
So specifically, what kind of help are you asking for? Are these weapons, financial support?
It's the mainly building capability of our security forces. It's a fourth generation, which Somalia have done mainly on the military, and we will be doing on the, also the police numbers up to 40,000 in next year. But what we are asking our international partners is the key capabilities that military, police, and the custodial corps require to take responsibility from ATMIS December 2024.
And tell us about the troop numbers, military numbers in Somalia. What do you want it to be, the number of Somali military, police, and custodial corps?
The agreement in Baidabo was Somalia to generate land forces up to 30,000, excluding special forces, Navy, and the Air Force. And the police, 40,000 police, both on the federal and the state police. And the custodial number is 8,500.
And if we talk about the land forces specifically, how many troops do you have ready now, trained, fighting for the country?
I think we have reached that the number that is required, but it requires also a thorough reform to ensure that the number and the quality matches in order to have a professional army that can take responsibility from ATMIS.
So update us on the military operations against Al-Shabaab. It seems the military activities have paused. What's happening?
Yes, since the fall or the autumn this year, there was a pause mainly due to El Nino that have affected throughout South Central Somalia. So there was no activity in terms of the offensive. Now El Nino ended last week, and it's going to start as soon as militarily possible.
Hussein Sheikh Ali is Somalia's national security advisor. He spoke with Haroon Maruf of the U.S. Somali Service. Independent media organizations in Guinea-Conakry have decided to continue publishing and broadcasting despite a desire to hold a media blackout to protest what they call government restrictions. The government denies muzzling the press but cautions against the spread of social and political tensions. Dauda Mohamed Kamara is editor-in-chief of Espas FM. He tells me the military-led government has instituted restrictions recently, including jamming some radio signals.
Let me say, more than 2 weeks ago, the authorities started by not closing, but just to block some websites, general information websites. From there, they went to the social networks as Meta, Twitter, WhatsApp, and this and that. And now, what is going now? They are trying to block all the signs of radios and the main radios as far as Stream, as Evasion. Let me say 2 weeks now. And it was this weekend on Thursday, we hear that they have removed one of our television channels, they call Joma Media. They removed Joma Media from Canal Plus. Both the radio and the television, they removed. And now, Friday, we are so surprised to mention that Espace FM and Espace TV, Evasion FM and Evasion TV was removed from Canal Plus. So, you know, Canal Plus is a sharer of the images. And the High Authority of Communication, we call here, who instructed them to remove our television channel from Canal Plus.
What did the government say? Why is the government instructing for the channels to be removed?
They are just telling us that is because of the national security and our programs, some journalists talking about the transition and what is not good for them, as they said, and mentioned that is for the national security. So they are blaming us that we are working not in the good of the country, because, as you know, more than 80% of Guineans are illiterate. So when they are listening to radios, they think that we are not doing good our job.
I know some time back, the Guinean press carried out a blackout. Now, what is the media saying now?
As the media, we have the associations, Yultagi, Remigi, where all the media holders are members. We are on meeting yesterday to declare this morning, this Monday, to go blackouts. No program on TVs, on radios, on websites, no program. But very late in the evening yesterday, Sunday, we saw a message from the association telling that we are going to stop all actions against which what we are running by this time, because all the owners of channels are members of them, so they agree with it. But how could the SPPJ syndicate say that he's not agree? So he also invited the media, the journalists, to not come to work. But when the bosses said you should come to work and you are paid by the boss, you have to go, because there is a contract between you and the boss. You have to go to work.
Dauda Mohammed Kamara is the editor-in-chief of SPARS FM. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is in the United States trying to convince lawmakers to stop stalling on more than $61 billion in supplemental funding for Ukraine's military. VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden has more.
Welcome to the National Defense University in Washington with a standing ovation. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky thanked the U.S. military for its support before pivoting to a message for U.S. lawmakers.
Ukraine is just a stepping stone for Russia.
Russian President Vladimir Putin's real goal,
his real target, is the freedom. Freedom people enjoy from Warsaw to Chicago to Yokohama.
Zelensky asked U.S. politicians not to betray Ukraine's soldiers, saying more weapons are needed to defeat Russia's forces.
We know what to do, and you can count on Ukraine, and we hope just as much to be able to count on you.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin told Zelensky America's support for Ukraine is unshakable and agreed on the danger of letting Russia win.
Putin still believes that he can outlast Ukraine and that he can outlast America.
And Austin said Washington's commitments must be kept.
If we do not stand up to the Kremlin's aggression today, if we do not deter other would-be aggressors, we will only invite more aggression, more bloodshed, and more chaos.
Ukraine's president is expected to make a similar plea Tuesday when he meets with lawmakers on Capitol Hill and with President Joe Biden at the White House. Jeff Selden, VOA News, The Pentagon.
And that's it for this Tuesday, December 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti, Washington, wishing that you we'll have an amazing Tuesday.
Africa for centuries has produced handmade, traditional and colorful fabric designs with elaborate prints and bold patterns. However, what is thought to be cheap Chinese-made African ethnic clothing is taking over the traditional market. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we will discuss the influx of Chinese-made African prints and their impact on local textile industries. Join the conversation Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.